Going on, guys? You're listening to episode number 4 of Belcore Radio. This is your very sexy host, Pony Boy. And I'm joined here by some folks, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves because that's what I'm going to do. So go ahead.
All right, this is the Beef. We're in Death Row Cluster in Toll Free.
And Black Maze is the usual, you know what I mean? Always here, all the time.
And, this has been the most fucking hectic episode we ever recorded.
That's for sure.
I know that the listeners, you guys probably don't really know everything. I'm not going to even get into a big rant on what all we've gone through to record this episode. But I want you to know that I sacrificed my fucking sanity, and I know these guys sacrificed their sanity, so you can listen to this.
God. What a fucking fiasco. So,
yeah. For lack of a better term, yes.
This is just ridiculous.
But it's okay. We're good now. We're recording the show, and nothing but this. So, I'm going to go ahead. Say what?
I said, we'll just deal with a little bit of lag that we're experiencing and crazy shit.
Yes.
And continue the show.
This episode might suck, guys, but deal with it. I'm tired of this bullshit. So, I'll just deal with it. I'm not making any more excuses. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and just jump right into it and get all this housekeeping crap done with. Because...
go for it.
I want to get it out of the way. Alright. This is shit that I was supposed to mention on the last episode, and we just kind of forgot and started doing fun things instead of talking about it. But I'm just going to go ahead and get it out of the way. Mark S. is hosting the website and all the MP3s on his server, so woohoo. We are archived on audio.textfiles.com. It's audio.textfiles.com/shows/Belcore Radio. So thanks to Jason Scott for putting us up there. And hopefully, if our site ever does die and we never come back, you guys can still go listen to the previous episodes there. But let's hope that doesn't happen. Thanks to Droops for putting us up on podcastincubator.org, so you can check us out there. And we got a real domain because we're not cheap anymore, so you can check us out at belcoreradio.net, so you don't have to use that crappy .net.tc thing we had before. So that's out of the way. We're going to get into the radio show now. And, I guess, need to start it out. I'm going to go ahead and follow up on the email that we got that I read in the last episode from Click, who was trying to start up a meeting area. I've been kind of working with him to organize this meeting. We've had pretty good interest in from people in the community, but I want to go ahead and put the word out that you guys can check out the really crappy-looking site that I threw together for him. It's temporary, so but you can check it out at Pensacola2600.tk, and go register on the forums there and let him know that you're interested in the group and everything. And next week, or next month, actually, conveniently right around the time of the 2600 meeting, I'm going to be in Pensacola for a family reunion, so I will probably be able to, I might not be able to make the 2600 meeting that Friday, but I will definitely be wanting to meet up with a lot of the people in that area. So if anybody's interested, just sign up for the forums, and I'll get back with you on it, and we can hopefully arrange something. But, I just wanted to put that out so, you know, he doesn't put in as much effort as he has into this meeting and not get anything out of it. But I think that's about all the for the housekeeping stuff.
Well, and I read somewhere that rumor has it you guys have a interview with Mark Spencer. Is that true?
Yeah. Actually, I don't know what the technical word for him. Mark S., our PBX guy and the smart one who actually does things for the show,
mm-hmm.
He arranged an interview. I don't know if it's going to be an actual, like, live interview, but I know that we're going to have it as soon as we get it done. We're going to have it, we're going to play it on the show. Yeah, Mark Spencer agreed to answer a few questions for us. I mean, he said to keep it around, like, 6 or 7 questions. And we're actually trying to find some... We're compiling a list of stuff that, you know, people around the community want to ask. So if anybody has a question they wanted to ask Mark Spencer, send it to radio@wood.net, and if it's good, we'll put it on the list.
And a little side note, Mark Spencer is the head of the Asterisk project, the PBX project for Linux, and actually been ported to other places as well, but for the most part, it's a Linux PBX. Actually, that'll be very good to hear.
Yeah, I am really excited about it.
Yeah, that's going to be really awesome. That's like, for one, the guy's like super smart, and for two, it's like the actual first, like, pretty popular/famous person we've had on the show.
Yeah, I think that'll be the first cool thing Belcore Radio has ever done. besides, of course, having world famous Beef on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Telefreak Master Beef.
Yeah, tens of people have heard of me.
Well, probably.
Yeah, but actually, that'll be. I'm sorry. See, we're getting that lag thing going on again. I'm sorry about that. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, CB, you're more popular. Well, you're still more popular than me and Pony Boy.
Yeah, you're probably going to bring us listeners for being on the show.
Whatever. Not going to happen. Probably drive the listeners away.
Well,
I doubt that.
I want, because I know that you started to talk about this last time we recorded this episode, this is, I believe, just for, to keep the listeners on the same level as us, I believe this is take 3 for this episode, or somewhere around there, but our good friend Beef here had the pleasure of attending DEF CON, so I'm going to kind of put him on the spot here, and Beef's going to give us a nice little impromptu DEF CON review of his experiences.
DEF CON review. Well, of course, you know, no DEF CON goes without saying lots of drinking and lots of, you know, hacking going on. Very fun. I met so many fucking cool people that I just, you know, had met through, like, IRC, through email, exchanging ideas, and it was always fun to, like, you know, put a face with a name, which was usually not the same face. You know, whenever you email somebody or you're on IRC, you get, like, an idea of, you think you have an idea of what they look like, and they never look that way. And hung out with Strom and Blake Ops, and, oh, man, it was, like, you know, pretty much, to me, DEF CON is, like, the hacker party scene. It's a little bit different than, like, hanging out at Hope. You know, Hope to me is, like, you still have, like, the party scene going on, but it's not as quite as serious as the DEF CON scene. And DEF CON is, like, nothing but a big fucking party the whole time. And a couple of good talks in between.
Occasionally you'll learn something in if you can pay attention to the drunken stupor.
Yeah, if you can get up early enough, you know, around noon, you know, to actually make a couple of talks, or, you know, you fly in, and I actually did see a lot of really good talks. There was one guy who gave a talk on FPGAs, which I had no fucking clue about, which was fucking awesome. Then Johnny Long gave a talk on Google hacking, which at first I kind of was like scoffed at, but then I saw him, and awesome. Like, you know, just like really interesting. And of course, you know, Strom and those guys, their asterisk thing, fucking awesome, once again. The one thing, I remember being at the asterisk thing, and somebody said to me, well, they didn't go to asterisk enough. I was like, what do you mean? They're like, well, I don't understand how the extensions config works. I was like, well, get out of here. You can read that. I mean, that's not the point of this talk. You're given that you know something about asterisk, and if you don't, you can probably read it somewhere, you know?
But I
thought that was kind of funny, like, people would, you know, complaining about, like, well, he didn't go into extensions config. Of course he didn't. He didn't read that.
Yeah, I think he was just intending it to be a... just something to be, like, an introduction to the concept and getting people turned on to the idea and not so much a technical how-to.
It amazed me, like, how many people who thought it was going to be, like, a how-to kind of, like, thing. And, kind of turned me off. Actually, they gave, you know, a great talk about it and actually talked about a lot of fun things you can do with an asterisk. But,
yeah.
You know, just amazed me, like, the people who would complain about it. Well, I don't understand, like, if it's just, you know, SIP config looks a little bit wacky. Why didn't he explain that? You know, it's like, shut up.
I heard many a good thing about their touch tone dialing game that they had set up.
And you know what? I missed that. I completely missed that.
I wish that I had been able to attend. Yeah.
Oh, man.
If I had been able to go, I think I would have owned that category. I would have walked away with the free asterisk t-shirts or whatever.
I don't know, man. You had some probably steep competition there. So, then we did Hacker Jeopardy. Was a lot of fun. Which, of course, is, you know, we had our own team together, which was never called, the Telefreak team. But I was kind of looking forward to doing the Hacker Jeopardy thing. But never came about. But still fun to hang out and watch Hacker Jeopardy go on. And there were a couple of things that I think the Hacker Jeopardy, I guess you'd call them moderators, got wrong. But that's another matter.
Well, did you have any, did you get a chance to play around? I know... Strom, and I think it was Strom and Black Racket, had set up the DEFCON by phone system.
Yep.
Did you get a chance to check that out at all?
No, actually, I did not. They had it. Actually, they did an excellent job of, like, posting it everywhere. Like, everywhere, all over, like, you know, different pools and stuff. You could, like, call, and actually, I thought the system was, like, a great idea. I remember, like, hanging out with Strom and him saying, because, like, the first day, Phil's internet got in late and fucked up the whole fucking schedule. And I think Strom had to pretty much go back and pretty much redo the whole, you know, DEF CON schedule. I mean, I think that's pretty much what he did at DEF CON at that whole point in time. It was, like, doing the whole schedule, because everything got all fucked up at that point, because that goes, like, from different place to different place, thinking that I was going to see one, you know, somebody talk there, and it would be somebody completely different. And they explain, well, oh, you know, the schedule's all fucked up. So I can't imagine, like, what Strom, you know, was, like, doing, you know, you know, trying to, like, keep up with, like, the constant moving schedule at DEF CON.
Well,
I didn't get a chance to call into that.
Yeah, that would explain. I actually, a couple days before the actual conference started, I was talking to him about the system, and he gave me the number and everything, so I called in, and, you know, I knew I wasn't going to be able to go to the conference, but I called in from my house line, and I set up an account on there, and I went on the schedule online, and set reminders to myself for, like, if I needed to wake up in the morning, I'd just set a reminder on my DEF CON by phone thing, and then my phone would ring in the morning, and I'd wake up and go to work or whatever. But it didn't work out that way. And now I think I just figured out why. Just because
the whole
schedule got thrown off.
Oh, man, it was kind of screwed from day one. I mean, pretty much, I remember, as I said, like, day one, Bill Zimmerman, like, pushed up the whole conference to talk about his encryption over voice over IP, which is pretty fucking weak, if you ask me. Actually, he was doing SRTP, and it sounded like, you know how you, like, whenever you do an SSH system to a remote host and ask you, you know, do you accept these, you know, you say yes or no for, you know, for host keys and whatnot? You know, and that was, like, his big thing. And it was like, really weak, actually. So he pushed it up, like, an hour, and then everything kind of went all astray. Like, I would look at my little printed schedule and go, oh, man, I got to go check this out and, like, go and just, like, you know, in the Pantheon, sit down and look, you know, okay. And then it'd be, like, a completely different talk. You know, so I can't imagine what, like Strom was doing the whole time. It was like, oh, fuck. You know, everything is so fucked at this point. You know, just trying to get it all straight. The dial of DEF CON thing going. So.
Well, cool idea, that actually, yeah, it is a great idea. And I think it real sucks that it didn't work out quite as smoothly as it could have. But at least now we all know who to blame. It was that damn Zimmerman.
Well, I mean, I think he was, like, one of them, but I think it was really the DEF CON organizers. Because I was hanging out with Blake Ops and Strom in their room, and I was like, so what's going on there? And I really didn't call it. His line that much, and he was just like, man, you know, we've asked, you know, the DEF CON guys to, like, help us out, you know, and they just did not do it, you know. Let us know when, it, like, a change comes up, and they're like, oh, yeah, we'll let you know, and they just didn't do it. So they were, like, pretty much, it sounds like to me, having to do it, like, on the fly, like, trying to figure out, like, what the schedule was. Ideally, it was a great idea, but unfortunately, you know, scheduling and whatnot just got so out of whack. I mean, it was just, like, crazy. You would see, you know, where I'd go to, like, the tent area, I can't even remember what it's called, and I would expect to see one person there and just get there to listen to them talk, and it'd be, like, somebody completely different. I mean, the schedule was, like, all fucked up, so I think they were screwed from, you know, pretty much day one after Phil Zimmerman decided to show up late.
After Phil Zimmerman ruined DEF CON.
Well, and actually, you know, I was talking to a buddy of mine, Renegade, and he was like, man, you got to see fucking Phil Zimmerman's, you know, talk. You're going to have to see it. It's fucking intense. So I went to it, and it wasn't even that big of a deal. It was, like, really disappointing. I was like, wow. fucking waste my time here. But what are you going to do? But I just see a lot of good talks, as I said, other than Phil Zimmer.
Yes, I was very upset that I missed out on this conference. But,
well,
I guess that's how the way things go.
Yep. Yeah. Well, you're going to do Hope, right?
I'm hoping so. I'll have to find a way to get up there, but yes, if I can make it, I'm definitely going to go.
We should. Actually, I think, to me, and I don't mean any disrespect to anybody who's really big into DEF CON, but I've always found Hope a little bit more fun. It's not, you know, DEF CON is like a way big party scene, and which is, like, a lot of fun, but, you know, Hope, you have, like, the parties and stuff going on, but, it's a little bit, I don't know, I don't even know how to describe it, like, a little bit more laid back, you know?
Well, I've never had the pleasure of, hacker conferences, so I don't really.
You should.
I've been dying to. I'm checking out in October up in Nashville. They have a conference mm-hmm. called Freaknik, so I'm gonna go check that out this year.
Yeah.
Hopefully that'll be pretty damn good. I've heard some good things about it.
Yeah, actually, my buddy Sleestack, he went last year. He went to like DEF CON, Hope, Freaknik, TourCon. I mean, he was just, like, pretty much all over the place. And he said TourCon and Freaknik were a lot of fun. He also said Hope was a lot of fun, too. But,
yeah, well, I mean, the local 2600 community in Atlanta is really involved in, you know, helping to organize Freaknik and whatnot, so I'm planning on probably going as a volunteer and just volunteering a couple, because I think, you know, for about 2 hours is what they require, just, you know, working as mm-hmm. checking people's ID badges and shit and making sure they're supposed to be there, but get a free t-shirt out of it, so.
Well, actually, and mostly, even like with DEF CON and stuff like that, is it's not so much always the people who talk and whatnot. It's more about the people you meet, you know? You meet,
yeah,
like, so many fun people, you know, that you would never, probably ever meet anywhere else in the world, you know? It's like random
yeah.
people and people that you've seen online that you get to hang out with and, you know, have a good time with. And to me, that's what makes, like, going to cons a lot of fun. It's not, you know, like, technical talks can be really a lot of fun, but it's also just, like, just hanging out with people, you know? Doing the whole, like,
yeah.
social thing.
And that's something that I also look forward to a lot, because, you know, I know a lot of people via talking on IRC, but, you know, I never really... It's never really people that I would have an opportunity to break with. Like, some people, you know, like, I met Black Mesa on IRC, and he lives in, like, the town right down the street from me, so I can, you know, I see him on a regular basis. But, I mean, then there's people like you, or like Strom Carlson, or, I'm trying to think of other people. I can't really think of anyone else off the top of my head. But just, you know, people that are too far for me to, you know, drive to see them.
Right.
And
that's pretty much your point to meet them, is, like, only at a con.
Yeah.
You know?
And if only DEF CON was just not so far away. Because if it was, you know, I mean, getting to Las Vegas from Georgia is not exactly an easy feat for me.
Right.
But Because I don't like flying in those airplanes. Especially not when John's flying them.
Well, that's another matter. But, but actually, I found, like, the one thing about DEF CON, I like Las Vegas for about 2 days, and then I'm pretty much done with it. I just want to get the fuck out of there. You know, it's a really, I mean, and I hate to say this for anybody who's listening who's in Las Vegas, but it's a fucking sleaze hole. It's not.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't like it there. And we were there for, I think, 6 days. And we were trying to get, like, standby flights out, like, a day and a half early. I was, like, so done with that place. And New York is, like, different to me. Whenever I go up to Hope, you know, I can stay in New York, and it's not that big of a deal. But fucking DEF CON, it's just, like, you know, it's fun to hang out with the AP, to have a lot of fun there, and then after it's all over with, you're like, I'm still in Las Vegas. You know, it's like, oh, God, get me the fuck out of here.
But on the upside, you can get a whore. So,
yeah, you can find
you can find something to take your mind off of it, you know.
Yeah, temporarily. And then it still becomes back to a sleaze bag place. It's still the same sleaze bag place that you were in just before the whore left, you know?
Of course, Ponyboy would be the one to think of that.
No, trust me. I know a lot of people have been to Las Vegas, and I'm not the only one who thinks about that.
Yeah. That's kind of hard. Yourself, man.
It's kind of hard not to... It's kind of hard not to think about it, though, when you walk down the street and people hand you their business card and their whores.
Yeah, but see, that's also the weird thing, is when you walk down the street and they're handing them out and it litters the street and it's like not even normal garbage, it's just whore garbage. Like, their trading cards and their fucking magazines, and you're like, oh my God, get me the fuck out of here. It's just really strange. Yeah. Not a big fan of Las Vegas.
You see, you see kids walking around their prostitute business cards and looking for the rare ones.
Well, you know, actually I have a well, you know Gid, right?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, I mean, he lives out there and he's like, fuck, I collect these things, fuck it. You know, it's like trading cards. I mean, they're like prostitute trading cards. And he's like, oh yeah, they're everywhere. I'm like, God, how do you live here? This is fucking very strange place.
I think somebody needs to invent a game that somehow involves those cards.
Oh man, good point.
Just different kind of prostitutes are worth different points.
Dude, I'm saying, like, you'd be like, hey, yeah, I'll trade you the holder card on 4th Street, but the holder card on, like, 2nd Street or whatever. Make a trading card game out of it.
Either way, I left there, I was, like, very much looking forward to Hope.
That's cool. And I hope I can make that. That'll be cool. And then, I don't know if Ponyboy still wanted me to go with him up to Freaknik or not.
Yeah, I'm still looking for roommates, so.
I told you I was up for it, so. Just let me know something.
Well, that's one down then. I'll have to ask around and, hey, if anybody listening wants to go to Freaknik, you know, I'm looking for roommates, just as long as you're not creepy.
Yeah, actually, I got a flyer at DEF CON. I was sitting at, like, Pool 1, and somebody came by and handed me a flyer for Freaknik. I'm like, all right, well, great. You know, I only have so many cons I can go to within a year. I actually had to work a little bit, so.
Yeah. That's why you're not cool. You're not elite anymore, man, because real hackers, they take time off work to go to every con.
Oh, that's what it is? Well, I guess I'm never going to be fucking elite.
But then again, I think there's so many conferences. There's so many conferences now that if you did take off work every time there's a conference, you'd probably end up working like 2 or 3 weeks out of the year. So,
well, that was the thing. As I said, with like Sleestack, I mean, I would call him. He's like, I'm at TourCon. I'm at Freaknik. I'm at fucking DefCon. I'm at Hope. Oh, I saw him at Hope. But he was like, God damn, dude. How do you pay your fucking rent?
Yeah. He's like, wait, what? Rent? I don't have rent. I live in hotels while I'm at conferences.
Right. I do the con circuit. Well, I guess most cons are, like, out west coast anyway, so.
We need more ESA conferences, I think, because...
Mm-hmm.
That's convenient for me, so we need more of them.
Well, start your own. There you go.
All right, I think I will.
Belcor Conference.
I'm there.
The Belcor Conference.
I'm announcing it now. Yes, the Belcor Conference. Going to be hosted right here in the nice small town of Duluth, Georgia. So anybody want to come, feel free. We don't have a specific date yet, but just show up in town sometime soon, and then contact me, and we'll figure some. Yeah. No, we actually had a sort of discussion about at the new 2600 meeting that started up in Atlanta, because. We have another 2600 meeting in Atlanta now, which is a lot more fun than the original. But we actually had some discussion about trying to start up a conference again, because there was a conference that we had once or twice, I believe, before I started, you know, hanging around with this crowd.
What con was it, do you remember?
It was called AtlantaCon. I think it only lasted for about 2 years or so.
Yeah, but see, Atlanta would be a great place for a conference, especially East Coast-wise.
Yeah. Well, we've got InterZone that's around this area that happened. I don't know if it actually, I don't even know if that still happens anymore. But we had some discussion about probably not anytime soon, since, you know, last Friday was the first meeting for this group, so we're not really ready to take on any big efforts like that, but there was some talk that we might consider in the future organizing a conference, so hopefully that'll work out, and we won't lose so much money on it that we can't do it the next year, but... So everybody, just keep your eyes open, and we might have it soon, and if we do, you guys will be the first to hear about it. I'll announce it on this show, but chances are it won't be called Belcor Con, though, so.
That's why we gotta make up our own and call it Belcor Con.
Well. So that was the conference section of the show, and I think that was basically what a good... See, it's about 2:34 now, so that was probably a good half hour, 45 minutes of us talking about conferences, which is not damn bad, so, which is really, actually, I find that really good, because we really don't have much else to talk about, so, we've used up half the show for it.
The Cisco
there's a few things, but... Not too terribly much, so it's a good thing we got off on that tangent. But, yeah, well, actually a couple things involving Cisco. I'm really glad that you brought up the Black Hat Cisco fiasco thing going on, because I completely forgot about that when I was making these show notes. But, yeah.
Pretty big news.
Yeah, and I don't know why I didn't think about it. But for anyone who hasn't heard, Mike Lynn from ISS is getting his ass sued really bad by Cisco because of a presentation he did at the Black Hat conference about a security exploit or whatnot that he found in their system. And they are basically ass-ramming him. So they're actually, the Southeast 2600 group, which is just kind of a collective of most of the 2600 groups in the Southeast, where they get the name, they are trying to raise funds to help pay some of his legal bills through this whole thing, since, you know, he really didn't do too much wrong. But,
he didn't do anything wrong, as far as I'm concerned. But.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a way of, like, getting them back and getting more money.
Well, it's more their way of trying to cover up the fact that there's a security hole at all. They originally told him that they did not want him to do the speech, and so he said that he wouldn't do the speech, and so he said he would do the speech on something else. And then he went on stage and did the speech anyways and said, you know, fuck you, Cisco. Which, you know, I mean, a lot of people don't realize exactly how important it was to him that people know about this. Like, he, in order to keep the company that he worked for, because the company, when they found out about the security hole, they were going to go public with it right then and there. And just start telling, you know, whoever the hell wanted to listen to him, start telling him about it. And he said, you know what, that's not right. And he quit his job over that. But they decided that they weren't going to do that anymore. And they hired him back and said, okay, how do you want to handle it? And so he said, let's give a speech at Black Hat and we'll talk about it.
Well, and he also gave Cisco a heads up, too. I mean, it wasn't like he was blindsiding Cisco. They pretty much said, they basically said, you're lying about this. This is incorrect.
Yes, they basically said, yes, you are lying, and then proceeded to take all the books that they gave out at the Black Hat conference and rip 30 pages out of them that contained the information from his presentation. And he decided that he was going to go ahead and do it anyways. So he quit his job again just so he could give the presentation and let this security problem be known. And now he's getting asked for it.
And actually invited Cisco to come and rebuttal him at Black Hat, which, from what I understand, they decided not to.
Yes, they decided instead that they just wanted to have the FBI seize basically all the computer equipment of everyone he had contact with at the conference. And there's a big FBI investigation on him right now. And, you know, he doesn't deserve this. You know, he was trying to help. Because I'm sure that they tried to tell Cisco about this beforehand, and Cisco probably said...
No, that's at the point where Cisco said, you're lying. That's incorrect.
Yes, they were like, no, this doesn't happen because we're Cisco, and...
He actually brought up several points where he attempted to, I think he went to, actually, Atlanta, to attempt to show what his presentation was going to be about, and, well, what would, I guess, maybe eventually what his presentation would be about, I think he pretty much got shut down even before he got there. I could be incorrect on that, but it wasn't it wasn't him just, like, blindly saying, we have these exploits, I'm going to give it out to all these, like, hacker guys. He had been telling Cisco for a while, like, hey, we found these, you know, like, for instance, like, with Cisco, ISO, or iOS, excuse me, there's, quote, no shellcode. And he was showing, no, actually, you can produce shellcode for iOS, you know. And they pretty much, like, shut him down. And he, from what I understand, is from the limited reading that I've read, had been trying to tell them, like, look, no, I do have this thing. And they're like, you're lying. He's like, no, I do have it. Nope, you're lying. Okay, fine. I'll bring it to Black Hat. Then, you know.
Yes, it's just another prime example of a big company getting in the mindset of the fact that they are Cisco and everyone likes them, that nothing they do is wrong. And if you say that something they do is wrong, then they will shut you down as fast as they can.
Yep.
But, yeah.
Well, at least try to.
So, if anyone is interested in, you know, helping him out a little bit, because, you know, he doesn't, I mean, you know, he's not a poor guy, you know, he's not homeless or anything, but he isn't really going to be able, or I can't say that for a fact, but he's going to have some troubles, you know, money-wise. And so if anybody is interested in helping him out, you know, giving a little bit of money to him so he can pay his legal bills, there is actually a PayPal account set up at the website for Freaknik. It's freaknik.info. So there's a little link on there somewhere that says Mike Lynn Defense Fund. So just click on there and it'll tell you how to send the money to it. And any money that is left over, like if, you know, you send him some money that doesn't get used for his legal defense, they're going to take all the leftover money and just send it straight to the EFF. So either way, you know, your money is going towards something good. Whether it's helping this guy out or...
I'm surprised the EFF hasn't, like, stepped in to kind of try to help him out anyways. Or is that already the case? I mean...
I actually am not sure, but I can't see why they wouldn't have, you know. That seems like a very good case of where the EFF would step in, because this is a place where they are quite needed. But, yeah,
exactly.
I mean, if you give money and it doesn't help him, it's going to go to helping somebody else that needs it, you know?
Right.
Because there's a lot of people out there that, you know, their story, you know, hackers out there that do something, and a big business or someone tries to quiet them about it. And that's what the EFF does. They help those kind of people. And you might not hear about it. It might not be, you know, all in the media like this has been. But it's going to help. You know, your money is going to go towards something that helps people. And that's a good thing.
Agreed.
And
yeah, I'm surprised EFF hasn't, like, stepped forward and said, you know, with Lynn, we're going to help you out and be, like, foremost and, you know, forefront in helping you out. Then again, you know, that might happen next week, so.
Yeah.
Or could there
already be? Well, hopefully they'll be. Yeah. And if not, and they're going to change their minds and go help him out.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess to sum it all up, Cisco, you guys suck. Just deal with the fact that you have bad security and fix it and say thank you, Mike Lynn, for helping us instead of suing someone. But more Cisco news, because this makes me mad talking about this whole lawsuit nonsense, so I'm going to move on. I don't know if it's been official yet. But I know there was talks about it. I don't know if it has
fully been a closed deal or not, but there's been a lot of talk about Cisco purchasing Nokia, which could kind of throw Cisco into a big field that could make them a lot of money, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, if, as far as... Sorry, you guys go ahead.
I was going to say, I really haven't heard that much about it, so this is kind of new news to me.
Well, actually, they say that they don't know for sure it's going to be, but from all sources and everything, they say most likely it will be. Because they're Cisco's looking into making, like wide range of wireless, like, technology and stuff like that. So,
I mean, as far as, because, you know, I could see if Cisco purchasing Nokia... Because, you know, when I think of cellular phones and things of that nature, Nokia is a company that, you know, really sticks out in my mind. Because they're, unless I'm mistaken, Nokia is the biggest company as far as producing cell phones goes. And so I could see that as being a very smart move on the side of Cisco if they're trying to get into that kind of field and try and make a little bit of money off of that. So I think it'd be fairly interesting to go out and buy my new Cisco cell phone. But of course, I could probably still hack the NAM on that thing.
But be careful.
Any particular reason that it upsets you that Cisco would buy out Nokia? Or
I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I mean, I guess from what I've seen of Cisco lately, I could say it might be kind of a bad thing because it means, you know, anybody who uses the really well-known Nokia NAM programming code to get in and reprogram their cell phone is going to get sued. So.
See, and that means I won't be able to, like, mess around with my phone, because that's what I have is a Nokia, and I don't feel like getting sued by Cisco.
But, you know, I'm pretty sure that they won't focus on the matter that much, unless it's something that is kind of new and will cause them to lose money, because that's really the issue.
It always ends up that way, yeah.
But, let's see. Some more big news that... I believe I read this on Flashdot a couple days ago. Novell, I never really could figure out how that's officially pronounced, is releasing SUSE Linux as open source now. And so you can actually, because, you know, for a while you had to pay for it and you didn't really get to see what was going on. But now they're releasing SUSE.
Table was, SUSE Professional. The normal SUSE was still free.
Oh, well, and then, yes, SUSE Professional then. But I think that's very good news, you know? It makes me feel real good inside to see that more things like this are becoming, you know, free and accessible to people. So,
They've been doing, like, NDS clients and stuff like that for Linux for a while. I guess that was mostly closed source, I'm guessing. I don't really know. I don't keep up with the Novell crap that much. But, so you're saying that they're going to open source all the utilities and whatnot for, like, NDS and stuff like that?
I don't know about all that. I just know, SUSE Professional is going to be open source now, which I'm assuming it wasn't before, because that's kind of how it goes together logically.
Yeah, you had to pay for it. Like, SUSE Professional, you had to pay for it. I mean, you had, like, normal standard, too, that you could, like, go download, like, all of, like ISO.org or whatever, but then you had SUSE Professional, which you had to pay for, which is the way that Red Hat got, you know. I think basically what they're doing is they're doing the same thing that Red Hat did, because Red Hat, you know, it got it to, like, Red Hat, Enterprise Edition, you had to pay Grip, and then they started Fedora Core, and then Fedora Core's free, so I think they're about doing the same thing about coming out with open.
Yeah, but Novell kind of like, to me, kind of dug themselves into a hole for a little while, because they had, back in, up until probably like the early 90s or so, they had like the LAN network, like, cinch, you know, using like protocols like IPX and stuff like that. And then this little thing called the internet came around, and there was this little protocol called TCP/IP came around. And a lot of people are like, well, fuck, you know, I can share files over, you know, TCP, you know, TCP/IP. And the one thing that they did always have was like network directory services and stuff like that. And they started releasing those, but I'm pretty sure those might have been closed source. But that was like right whenever, network started to go into like the Linux game. I mean, they've been around forever, you know, and I think they're just trying to find their little niche at this point, you know, like try to keep like NDS alive and, you know, stuff like that. So it's probably like why they're, you know, open sourcing it. That would just be my thought about it, but I don't know.
I think that overall, as far as the impact that this is going to have on, you know, the use of open source, you know, open source operating systems and open source software, and just, you know, the Linux community and the open source community in general, I think that this is just another good step in the right direction as far as the whole community. I can't think of the right word I'm trying to think of. As far as the whole community goes, I think that it's a big step in the right direction towards more people using open source software. But
right, make it more valid to use open source software. But really, to me, it's when I look at somebody like Novell, it's kind of like they've been in the last throes of being in business for quite a while. They adopted Linux, you know, probably like late 90s, you know, and they're like just getting into it when Red Hat had already been involved and whatnot. And I think they pretty much like saw like the writing, the writing on the chalkboard or whatever, and pretty much said, fuck, our little old products using like IPX, you know, that old protocol, pretty much dead. We have to, you know, move and migrate to something different. And we can either develop our own operating system, probably not a good idea, or adopt Linux. And they moved all their Novell software, like NDS and stuff like that, over to Linux. And I guess now they're just now getting around to where they might be open sourcing it. But actually, I haven't read that much about it. But that'd just be my guess. It's like, you know, they're just like a company, just like Red Hat, you know, at this point.
Well, I don't really know exactly how it would work in this matter, but as far as I can recall, when Red Hat decided that they were going to kind of, you know, discontinue making new releases of Red Hat, and it was just going to focus on the Fedora project.
Right.
From what I can recall, programs for Red Hat did not work on Fedora, and you had to have specific programs for Fedora. So things that were written for specifically use on Red Hat would not work. And so I'm curious if that's going to be the same kind of issue with this kind of, with the SUSE project, if it's going to be something like a, you know, I don't think that would be much of an issue now that I think about it, considering the rest of the SUSE releases were already free and open. I guess it wouldn't be too terrible of an issue. But, so, I retract everything I just said.
The reason, like, Red Hat and stuff didn't work on Fedora was just because there's, like, It was like basically, it was two almost totally different operating systems. I mean, it's going to be like that with any type of Linux. Like, that's why with different distros, you have to get different things, because one thing wouldn't work on another distro, and so on and so forth. Because it's like two totally different operating systems. So who knows?
Yeah, well, if you're doing like binary installs with like library dependencies, I mean, of course, if you have like something like Slackware, where you do a traditional like configure, make, install kind of thing, you usually don't run into that. But hence the reason I don't really use any Red Hat products or.
Yeah, I mean, I always use binary, you know, the binary source, and I compile it, so I'm not into the whole package.
Yeah, I mean, I still to this day, I mean, I'm a big Gentoo fan, but I'm also like a Slackware buff as well, and OpenBSD and multiple other things, but it's pretty much you pull down the source, you do your configure, make, install, you build it from scratch, from the ground up, and configure, you know, auto-make, auto-config tells you what you need to have. That's where your dependencies lie. Instead of like doing like binary rollouts of RPMs or whatnot, but that's just me.
I mean, I know I use Slackware. Slackware is like my distro of choice. The only distro I ever use, and when I compile something, I very rarely ever run into problems compiling it from source with Slackware. Unlike on when you're trying to use a package, you run into problems quite often. But when I'm compiling from source with Slackware, I've had maybe, I can count on one hand how many times I've had a problem, and I've been using it for, like, 3 years, so.
Well, yeah, that's another thing. I mean, whenever you run, like, you know, configure, you know, .forward/configure, and it's going through, like, auto-make, auto-config, it's going out and, like, you know, it'll kind of work around, you know, it's, like, for instance, if you don't have libxyz, you know, either it'll tell you you don't have libxyz, or, well, I don't really need that for what we're doing right now, you know. Which auto-config and auto-make are a whole other mess. Especially like Slackware, it kind of like, you can pretty much just grab tarballs and, you know, a bunch of figure, and if it says you need this library, you'd go to the website, grab this particular library, do your make install there, and then go back to what the hell you're trying to compile and continue onward.
Exactly. And that's why people are like afraid of like doing little command line things like that. I mean, after a while, it just kind of becomes second nature. It's kind of weird not when you don't.
Oh, yeah. Which is actually a good thing because, as you kind of point out, you don't even really think about it anymore. Like, where somebody types in, like, you know, RPM, you get used to typing in, you know, .forward/ amp amp make install. Yeah.
I mean, it's for one, it becomes second nature, and you don't even think about it anymore. And for two, it's just so much crazy to use this, like RPMs or whatever. It's just so much. In my opinion, I think it's actually easier to deal with and have to deal with packages.
Same here. Actually, that's one thing I also like about Gentoo is, you know, where you can just pass use flags that'll, you know, take over the compile process and do it all for you. I gotta say, Gentoo is maybe, Slackware made me do things on my own. Gentoo does the exact same thing and makes me a little bit lazier. Hate to say it, but it's true.
I just find Slackware my distro choice. I love it. I don't think I'll ever switch unless something comes out that I think is a lot better. So.
I don't know, man. Yeah. I did the same thing, man. I'm still to this day a big Slackware fan, but I swear to God, I use Gentoo a lot. I mean, the one thing I loved about Slackware, minimal distro, you know, you could just, like, select exactly what you want installed, and Gentoo really carries that a little bit further. But, I mean, to me, either distribution isn't wrong. I mean, Slackware, Gentoo, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, like, basically, the way I look at it is, a distro is just, based on your taste. You know, what you like and what you feel comfortable with and everything like that. And I, for one, just feel more comfortable using, like, you know, more command line and whatnot. I mean, everybody has their own different taste, so whatever works for you.
No, exactly. But by the same token, I mean, whenever you have, like, for instance, even, you know, even with Slackware, I mean, the nice thing about it is you can build the system for what it's going to be designed to use. Like, it's going to be a web server, so therefore I don't need, you know, Xorg or X386. I don't need all that crap. It's just going to be a web server. That's all it's ever going to be, you know. It's nice to be able to, like, strip down a system because, I mean, not only do you strip all that, you know, extra storage and crap out of it, but you also cut down on vulnerabilities and stuff like that. You build it to just what you want it to be. I've always liked that kind of approach. That's the reason I always like BSD flavors, you know, like FreeBSD and OpenBSD and stuff like that. I mean, you build it to what you want it to be, and that's it, nothing more.
That's exactly why I like Slackware, because, I mean, with Slackware, it's so easy. Just, it gives you the choice of, you know, if you want to use it just for a desktop, you don't need a web server on a desktop. You don't need a mail server on a desktop. You know, I mean, it gives you options.
Right.
Unlike a lot of the disk stuff, they automatically install all the unnecessary server stuff that you don't even need.
Yeah, and just all against a bunch of crap. Exactly.
Yeah, actually, I want to touch on a little bit of sort of some. It's not really Linux, but what was mentioned earlier of, you know, it's all what you're comfortable with, you know, and what you do. But, you know, I think that could be kind of applied not just to different Linux distributions, but to different operating systems in general. You know, like, because personally, I mean, I use Windows, and I like Windows. I'm curious about Linux, but I really don't see a big need for me to use it, you know? I can, I mean, but then again, I don't really require a lot out of my computer besides, you know, being able to go on the interweb and get on IRC, and that's about all I use my computer to do, and edit some audio, and that's about it. And
right, so
I get a lot. Yes, but I get a lot of shit from people in the hacker community because I use Windows. And I think that there's a lot of, I don't really know why, but there's a lot of, you know, hatred for Windows. But I mean, like, I'm not saying it's the greatest operating system for everyone. I'm really not. But it works, you know. It's an operating system, and it does its job. And I've never had a major problem with Windows.
But, see, that's one of the big things that I don't understand about, especially, like, you know, Linux users, BSD users, or whatnot. I don't understand why everybody wants to convert the world over to something. I just don't understand why my grandmother needs to be running Linux. If it serves my purpose, then I wouldn't give a fuck if my grandmother can use it. I've never really understood that whole thing. You know, I don't know. You know, I will occasionally joke around, like, with, like, a Windows guy and be like, you know. But overall, I just don't care. If, like, for instance, you run Windows and that works for you, I just don't care. It's not that big of a deal to me, and I don't understand why people push it so much, but whatever.
I don't understand why people, I mean, it's not that big a deal. I mean, like I said, if whatever works for you, whatever your taste is, go for it, you know. I don't care what you use. The only person I care about is
exactly.
I know it's probably, yeah, but whatever you want to use, go right ahead. I don't really give a shit. You can fucking for all I care. I just fucking don't care.
Yeah, I've never really been big into, like, trying to convert people over to, like, Linux and stuff like that. I mean, I find it great. Actually, the only time I try to, like, convert people is when they're trying to do, like, for instance, like, you know, like I have a buddy of mine who's does like a lot of Unix administrations. I'm like, well, obviously then it would probably be better, you know, if you're going to be doing this every day, then maybe, you know, running Linux on your local workstation might be a good thing. But really, I don't care if, you know, yeah, if my mom runs Linux. It really makes no difference to me. I don't care. I don't understand the whole driving value of forcing or pushing things onto people. I don't care. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, I basically think what it is that everybody's just trying to, you know, one person says, hey, you know, you just switch over to Linux, and the other person's like, hey, yeah, you switch over to Linux. There's a big whole people going along with other people telling everybody to switch over to Linux.
Right, right.
Well,
they just don't understand that.
Well, see, the factor that you really have to take into consideration is that if you convert your mom or you convert your grandmother over to using Linux, the more that they know about Linux and the easier that they can navigate through a Linux system, that's the quicker they can find your porn folder.
Not my porn folder.
So.
Oh, that doesn't really matter.
So, what you do is you have a Windows box that you let your mom use, and you have a Linux box that you get all your porn on.
Your best bet is a dual boot into Linux, search porn, and then dual boot back into Windows. They'll never find it then.
Yeah, they won't do the computer turns on.
Or, you know, you could just use your imagination, and then you don't have to worry about ever getting caught.
Oh, man.
Or, you know, you can go to Las Vegas and pick up some business cards off the street, and then you don't have to worry about porn at all.
Yeah, then you just have physical evidence. Why are all these cards under your bed?
Yeah, you know how Pony Boy, he has this little metal case that he sticks under his bed with, like, stacks of porn movies in it, in magazines and whatnot.
Under lock and key.
Well... I didn't say no, but we're going to hope my parents never listen to this show.
Well, sorry, people.
I think I think that's about all we have to discuss. So, you guys want to go ahead and, go ahead and close this show out. We've been going for about an hour or so now. So, as we close the show every week, until next week, guys, keep hacking, keep freaking, and keep having fun. And this has been Pony Boy and
Black Mesa.
Those other guys. And we will catch you guys in 2 weeks. Oh, shout out to Hawk.